Good evening, I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
You're watching Consider This, the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Now, as the dust settles on Singapore's 13th general election, let's evaluate the underlying trends and new dynamics that the results have revealed. Joining us on the show tonight, we have Bridget Welsh, who is with the Asia Research Institute at University of Nottingham, Malaysia. Welcome to the show, Bridget. It's always good to have you here.
It's
and
nice
welcome
to be here.
Back. Okay, so I do want to ask you about what's been recent narratives coming out from the election. So the ruling PAP, People's Action Party, has seen recently more and more critical interpretations of the general election results, yours included in a recent piece, which highlighted some strategic campaign missteps. Now, judging on what's been written lately, Bridget, where do you and others differ from PAP's preferred narrative?
Well, I think, you know, most people in Singapore recognize that a 9% drop in a popular vote is actually not normal for Singapore elections, mm-hmm. as well as a loss of a GRC, which is a group representation constituency. And I think this is significant in terms of the losses. And I think their emphasis is to make that less significant, to point out that the fact that they did win over 90% of the seats, mm-hmm. that they won 61% mm-hmm. of the popular vote. And they're focusing on the glass half full, while others are looking at the glass half empty, or at least not so much the empty part, but there's a recognition that there are gaps in that glass that need to be drawn to attention to.
Bridget, to what extent is this a consequence of the PAP itself upping the ante on its performance? Always, you know, presuming that they will do much better than, you know, and at least in this case they've done, that they have the upper hand, the superior political organisation in Singapore, that in some ways, there's no real reason to, in fact, have a federal to have an opposition. Do you think they are partly to blame for the for this kind of deficit analysis, that something's gone wrong rather than gone right for them?
I think there are a couple things going on here. First of all, I think they do set an unrealistic standard. I think in any other context, if they would appreciate that potentially some losses are actually acceptable and normal, they would actually have a much different type of reaction. But I think we have to ask ourselves why they have this type of reaction. And it's partly because of two things. Number one, they don't see the need for alternative voices. They don't see the need for an opposition. They think they are the answer. And as a consequence, that has actually colored their views. And the second thing that's going on is that they do want to be in full control. And this is something deeply rooted within the PAP. Mm-hmm. And I think that giving up that control has been something that is very hard for the PAP. And it's hard for all systems that are used to being one dominant party systems to give up power. And I think we're clearly seeing a resistance to that.
Mm-hmm. And on that note, I do want to ask you about the youth vote, because that seems to be where, you know, the desire for differing voices lie. Talk to us about the importance of young and minority voters in this election, because when Prime Minister Lin Hsien Loong was asked whether PAP had lost the youth vote, he said, to quote him, "Young people have significantly different life aspirations and priorities." So he recognizes that there are differences, but what are they doing to kind of acknowledge that this is a conversation that's being had?
I think we have to understand that it's a good thing that there's a recognition that there are differences within the Singapore, and I think that is a very positive step. But if we look at the history of Singapore elections in the last three elections, 2011, 2015, and 2020, we see that the youth vote has been one of the groups that have swung. They swung in 2011. They swung back to the PAP with a kind of nationalist narrative, Lee Kuan Yew's passing in 2015, and they swung back in this election. So in a sense, it's not just people under the ages of 25 to 21, which is the ages that we've seen the most swing, and initial polling results suggest, but it's also really anywhere from the ages of 35 and below. And it has been a pattern. And now there are also other swing voters that we look at when we analyze Singapore. One has been the issue of minorities, issues of Malay community and the Indian community, and they have swung in different elections. For example, in 1991, the Malay community was very important in that election. And we can see that there were a lot of issues about the sensitive issues of race in this campaign. Mm. And they had been happening before the campaign, the presidency, issues associated with brown face ads and others. And so this is a community that we do see some movement in that context. Some other studies also point to the traditional PAP voters that have moved away from the party. This is the support for PSP in this context. I also look at the elderly community in terms of that were swing in 2011, and I think that they will be very important in this election because this was a pandemic election. They stood in very long lines during the election.
And so at higher risk
as
well.
Yes, and they were high. And so I think that there are going to be more analyses that come. So it's not just about young people. It's about specific groups within the context of Singapore. And the PAP also has its base, such as new citizens, such as particular traditional supporters. So we look at that analytically to analyze how those moves are changing.
Right. Bridget, sorry to interrupt, but very quickly, I mean, the terms of the PAP's own demeanor, its own outlook, and in fact, the age profile of the PAP, it's reasonably young, and it seems to be a party that does put it, unlike many authoritarian long-term parties in the region that are gerontocracies, you know, lots of old people. This is actually relatively young, and Ting Pei Ling, the Kate Spade candidate of the PAP from many electoral cycles ago, she did very well.
Yes.
So does the PAP recognize that it's the young, that the young face is necessary?
There are two things here. First of all, the election was about the fourth generation of leaders.
Mm.
All right. In fact, Lee Hsien Loong was speaking about resigning and retiring in 2 years. He's in his late 60s now. And so I think that...
Relatively young by Malaysian standards?
Extremely young by anybody's standards. And he's still many people are still young at heart as well, including himself. So I would say that what we see is a situation where it was about bringing in younger leaders. And also they had a lot of young candidates, but some of those young candidates didn't have the same appeal as the opposition. Mm. And I think they didn't have the same way of engaging the opposition, the electorate in a way that was creating the sense of charisma, the sense of excitement, which really worked to the advantage of Workers' Party. So I think that it's not that the party is young, it's also whether or not it's engaging the young in a particular way, and also it's whether or not it's changing how it's engaging. And I think this is what did not happen in this election in a way that actually created a momentum for PAP's favor, and it worked for the opposition.
All right, fascinating, and there's a lot more to unpack there. We're going to take a quick break, but we're going to come back and continue our look at the results of Singapore's election. Stay tuned to consider this.